The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, it is. It is, and it's a Thursday, and it's, oh my God, what a horrible day. You know, I joked, sort of gallows humor online earlier today. Why can't I get this song out of my head? And I posted a video of an acoustic video of R.E.M. doing It's the End of the World as We Know It. And if I could play music, if I could do the kind of show I wanted to do and mix in music and news and commentary, that's what I would have opened with today, because, oh my goodness, that's what it feels like. First of all, last night, again, I'm in South Florida, where we expect to be hit by hurricanes, knocking on wood laminate. That's so far so good. But seeing how Ida hit the Northeast last night is just mind-blowing. For years, we saw news reports of, you know, warnings about climate change and what it was going to look like. But it always was off in the future, right? No, you know, it'll happen someday, maybe. Or if you're a Republican, it's a hoax. Well, it's neither of those things. It's here. It's now. It's real. Seeing the water just streaming into the New York City subways. Subways closed last night. People were stranded. Cars floating away. Expressways. The Bronx shut down still today. Philadelphia. Oh my goodness. When I recorded What's News this morning, the death toll in the Northeast from Ida, from the remnants of Ida, was 8. It's now somewhere around 25. 25 people dead, and they expect the numbers to go higher. This is catastrophic. And this is only the beginning. This is the beginning. This is what they're saying. You know how they always talk about, oh, it's a 100-year storm. This is a 500-year storm. Oh, shoot, I forgot to start YouTube again. Hold on, YouTube. Hi, YouTube. Sorry about that. I started by talking about the crazy news. I'm sorry, you missed the first 2 minutes. I'm a bit beside myself. The news from the hurricane, the storm in the Northeast, the loss of life, and the fact is they were expecting the storm to hit, but nobody expected it to be as devastating as it was. Nobody expected over 3 inches of rain to fall on Central Park in an hour. It shattered the record that was broken last week when the concert was cut off in midstream because of the remnants of Hurricane Henri going through the area. And when they broke a record with 1.94 inches of rain in Central Park in an hour. Last night it was over 3. Over 3 inches in 1 hour. This is unheard of. And again, get used to it, because this is the end of the world as we know it, or this is life in the 21st century. Thanks so much. Welcome to it. And I hate that this is it. Selfishly, it's like, I'm glad I'm old. I'm glad that I'm not at this point in history, at my daughter's age. Allison just left here. She's off today. So she just left here. And I just can't imagine life for a 22-year-old. Here she is staring at climate change. These catastrophic weather events are now common. This is only the beginning of hurricane season. This is the beginning of September. Hurricane season runs till the end of November. I believe there are 3 storms out in the Atlantic right now. None of them threatening us immediately, but you know, this is 2 in 2 weeks. And then there's the Supreme Court, which last night, you know, yesterday I told you, so the Supreme Court did nothing. They just let this horrific draconian law go into effect in Texas. Well, last night they actually handed down a ruling on it. They were asked to weigh in. And they did. 5-4 in favor of the crazies. So Chief Justice Roberts voted with the three what are called liberals on the court. I don't call them liberals, but compared to the other five, they're all democratic socialists, aren't they? But Justice Sotomayor wrote a dissent to which Breyer and Kagan joined. Roberts didn't join in on Sotomayor's dissent, but I'm going to read it for you. And then we're going to call Lisa Graves, who you know by now. She's a friend of the show. She's a former deputy assistant attorney general in the Clinton administration. She knows her way around the law and around government and around regulations. She now runs True North Research, exposing the evildoers in high places. And she's actually on vacation. But when I saw the news this morning, I emailed her. And at first I got the auto response saying, I'm on vacation. Sorry, I'll talk to you after September 8th. And then about an hour later, she said, oh, yeah, I will absolutely come on with you if you still want me. Yes. But let me share with you before I get her on the line, what Justice Sotomayor wrote, because it's stunning. She wrote, the court's order is stunning. Presented with an application to enjoin a flagrantly unconstitutional law engineered to prohibit women from exercising their constitutional rights and evade judicial scrutiny, a majority of justices have opted to bury their heads in the sand. Last night, the court silently acquiesced in a state's enactment of a law that flouts nearly 50 years of federal precedence. Today, the court belatedly explains that it declined to grant relief because of procedural complexities of the state's own invention. Because the court's failure to act rewards tactics designed to avoid judicial review and inflict significant harm on the applicants and on women seeking abortions in Texas, I dissent. And then she goes into detail. In May 2021, the Texas legislature enacted SB 8, the Act, which took effect statewide at midnight on September 1st, makes it unlawful for physicians to perform abortions if they either detect cardiac activity in an embryo or fail to perform a test to detect such activity. This equates to a near categorical ban on abortions beginning 6 weeks after a woman's last menstrual period, before many women realize they're pregnant, and months before fetal viability. According to the applicants, who are abortion providers and advocates, the Act immediately prohibits care for at least 85% of Texas abortion patients and will force many abortion clinics to close. The respondents do not even try to argue otherwise, nor could they. No federal appellate court has upheld such a comprehensive prohibition on abortions before viability under current law. Again, if you're just joining us, I'm reading from Justice Sonia Sotomayor's dissent on the opinion issued last night, such as it was. It was 2 pages unsigned, basically striking down Roe v. Wade in what they call, I don't know. We'll talk to Lisa about it. I don't want to make statements that I don't know for sure. But let me finish reading the dissent and then we'll call Lisa Graves. Excuse me. Sotomayor continues, the Texas legislature was well aware of this binding precedent. To circumvent it, the legislature took the extraordinary step of enlisting private citizens to do what the state could not. The Act authorizes any, listen to this, the Act authorizes any private citizen to file a lawsuit against any person who provides an abortion in violation of the Act, who aids or abets such an abortion, including by paying for it, regardless of whether they know the abortion is prohibited under the Act or even intends to engage in such conduct. I'm trying to, you know, to eliminate the legalese and the chapter and verse and stuff. All right. Courts are required to enjoin the defendant from engaging in these actions in the future and to award the private citizen plaintiff at least $10,000 in statutory damages for each forbidden abortion performed or aided by the defendant. What? In effect, the Texas legislature has deputized the state's citizens as bounty hunters, offering them cash prizes for civilly prosecuting their neighbors' medical procedures. The legislature fashioned this scheme because federal constitutional challenges to state laws ordinarily are brought against state officers who are in charge of enforcing the law. By prohibiting state officers from enforcing the act directly and relying instead on citizen bounty hunters, the legislature sought to make it more complicated for federal courts to enjoin the act on a statewide basis. I hope your head is exploding as mine is right now. She continues, taken together, the act is a breathtaking act of defiance of the Constitution, of this court's precedents, and of the rights of women seeking abortions throughout Texas. But over 6 weeks after the applicants filed suit to prevent the act from taking effect, a Fifth Circuit panel abruptly stayed all proceedings before the district court and vacated a preliminary injunction hearing that was scheduled to begin on Monday. The applicants requested emergency relief from this court, but the court said nothing. The act took effect at midnight last night. Today, the court finally tells the nation that it declined to act because, in short, the state's gambit worked. The structure of the state scheme, the court reasons, raises, quote, complex and novel antecedent procedural questions that counsel against granting the application, just as the state intended. This is untenable. It cannot be the case that a state can evade federal judicial scrutiny by outsourcing the enforcement of unconstitutional laws to its citizenry. Moreover, the district court held this case justiciable in a thorough and well-reasoned opinion after weeks of briefing and consideration. At a minimum, this court should have stayed implementation of the act to allow the lower courts to evaluate these issues in the normal course. Instead, the court has rewarded the state's effort to delay federal review of a plainly unconstitutional statute enacted in disregard of the court's precedents through procedural entanglements of the state's own creation. The court should not be so content to ignore its constitutional obligations to protect not only the rights of women, but also the safety of its precedents and the rule of law. I dissent. And that was Justice Sonia Sotomayor's dissent. And it was brilliant. And again, it was joined by Elena Kagan and Stephen Breyer, but not by Chief Justice John Roberts, who did vote with the minority. I'm blown away. All right. So what I think we need to do is get Lisa Graves on the line. Man, I just had her. Here she is. All right. So let's call her again. Lisa Graves, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General. She's the founder and executive director of True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org. But and she's checking in from her vacation. Lisa Graves, you there?
I am. Thank you so much for inviting me to
come. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for joining us and for coming in on your vacation. But I'm guessing you have a couple of things to say about what the Supreme Court did last night. I just read Justice Sotomayor's dissent, which I thought was quite brilliant. But here we are. Is Roe v. Wade dead?
Well, I think that it's on the edge of being destroyed by the Supreme Court. And I think this court has been packed by right-wingers, by Trump and by Leonard Leo, and very powerful special interests on the right, the far-right religious sort of theocrats who want to impose their personal views on the rest of America. And so I think it's a real crisis what the court has done and what the court has allowed to go into effect in Texas. It will certainly
harm the women and girls of the state of Texas. And it's totally an outrageous, offensive, and absurd law that has passed in Texas and has been allowed to stand by this, in my view, corrupted court that is unworthy of public trust based on how it's been packed with people who are not fit to be neutral deciders on our Supreme Court about our Constitution.
Yeah, you know, this thing, again, I was aware of the mechanism of deputizing random people to turn in their neighbors or anybody who might help someone else try to obtain an abortion, you know, with the idea of a reward of $10,000 for turning in somebody who might, you know, who might want to take control of her own body. By the way, these are the same people who are screaming, "My body, my choice," about getting vaccinated. The opposite world nature of it is just stunning. But and now, so Sonia Sotomayor, in her dissent, explains this perverted way that they're getting around the Supreme Court by making it harder to challenge it on a federal level. Then today, you know, I live in Florida. The head of the Florida Senate said, first thing we're going to do is introduce a basically identical bill. Then I just heard Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, saying, oh, we're on top of that. We're going there next. This is going to spread like wildfire because the Supreme Court just, instead of codifying Roe v. Wade, they just said, yeah, those precedents we told you we'd uphold, yeah, never mind.
Well, the Roe v. Wade has been the law of the land for nearly 50 years and has been the subject of many efforts by right-wingers to impose their personal views on other people. And for nearly 50 years, that framework of Roe versus Wade has stood. And what it says is that states and the government should really play no role in women's decisions during the first trimester. As you know, Nicole, as a fellow woman, you wouldn't even know you were pregnant until about 6 weeks. You wouldn't know you'd missed a period until about 6 weeks. And the idea that an embryo that is about the size of a grain of rice should have equal or greater rights than a human being who may have been raped, may be the victim of incest, may be in an abusive relationship and have no desire to have a continued relationship with that partner, mm-hmm. May have deep financial or emotional challenges or issues or physical health issues. The idea that these legislators, these arrogant legislators and these right-wing governors would try to impose their decision on ordinary human beings, on women and girls getting the advice of their doctors about what to do about a pregnancy is truly offensive and truly authoritarian. And the arrogance to displace the personal private decisions, religious decisions, philosophical decisions, decisions about one's destiny with the dictates of these people on the Supreme Court who've been handpicked to overturn this precedent, handpicked for that role by Trump and by the people who advised Trump to engineer this overturning of a Supreme Court precedent is really grotesque and offensive. And it demonstrates yet again why this court has gone so far astray and really is unworthy of public support and public confidence.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it wasn't worthy before. I mean, just seeing how the last three justices were seated it certainly did away with any belief I had in the credibility or the objectivity of this court. This is a political court when it's not supposed to be. This Republican Party has made everything political. Everything is political, from a vaccine to help us, survive a global pandemic, to every single now Supreme Court ruling, and we're looking at three justices who I think were illegitimately seated anyway. This to me is a constitutional crisis. The only way forward, as one listener emailed to me earlier, is. Who said we need to talk about unpacking the Supreme Court,
yep.
Because Donald Trump packed it with here's what he said. Unpack the court. It's imperative that we unpack the Supreme Court by expanding the number of justices. The message needs to be that we are unpacking the court. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. The fact is that the U.S. Constitution sets no number for the size of the Supreme Court. And it's been this size for, you know, nearly 150 years, nine justices, even though the United States has grown so much bigger and so much more complex. This is a court that the Congress could change the size, could increase the size, and could, in doing so, both provide, you know, more opportunities for justice for the American people and ensure that we actually have fair justices, neutral justices, not people who were chosen with the desire, the outlook, the basically predetermination that they're going to overturn these and other precedents, as Leonard Leo bragged to funders, as the Washington Post reported in May of 2018 in a story by Bob O'Hara and Sean Boberg. The fact is that this court, this sort of shadow docket that some of the justices have spoken about, it has nearly 9,000 cases that are brought to it every year, and it chooses to hear only about 90 of those cases, so 1% of the cases. Even though this court has more clerks, you know, more technology to help it decide more cases, but in my view, in some ways, it wouldn't matter whether this particular court was choosing more cases, because it basically has the power to choose whatever it wants to hear. And these very partisan, very political, very right-wing justices, some of whom have very sketchy backgrounds, like Justice Kavanaugh, who never should have been confirmed, who should have been impeached, in my view, before he was even put up to the Supreme Court for lying under oath. And then obviously we heard the compelling testimony of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford about his attempted sexual assault of her. Then you have these two illegitimate other appointments in Neil Gorsuch, who was installed into a seat that arose early in 2016, that should have been filled by President Obama. That seat was stolen by Mitch McConnell with the aid of Leonard Leo and in the support of Donald Trump, filling this seat. And similarly, Amy Coney Barrett, who, you know, less than a year ago was nominated to the Supreme Court on the eve of that election and never should have been confirmed. So there are two justices, in fact, three, in my view, who never should be on this court. So we certainly need to unpack this court in order to restore any measure of confidence in the impartiality, in the fairness of our highest court in this country.
Right. And the other thing, Lisa, is that we haven't mentioned is that Mitch McConnell did away with the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. Now, the Democrats had gotten rid of it for other executive appointments, I think, and judicial nominations, but not for the Supreme Court. Of course, the minute the Republicans had control, they did away with the filibuster for the Supreme Court, making it possible that if they had control of the Senate, they'd get to confirm whatever justices they put forth. They also made it very clear that Obama had won re-election, they would have kept that seat. I mean, I'm sorry, if Hillary Clinton had won, they would have kept that seat open. They would not have let her fill it. Lindsey Graham said it. It wasn't only Mitch McConnell. So, they play these games, you know, that it's the old, it's okay if you're a Republican. Well, now you got, and I know I'm veering off a little bit here, but Joe Manchin just made some noise. The Democrats better shut up with that $3.5 trillion infrastructure thing. Well, you know what? Joe Manchin better figure out what fucking side he's on, because I'm getting really pissed. Not that I have anything to say about it, but oh my God.
It is really outrageous what we're seeing here, because what we have in effect in the United States Senate is minority rule. We have a majority of senators representing nearly 40 million more Americans than the minority of those senators, which is led by Mitch McConnell, who, in my view, personal view, not my organizational view, is a notorious liar. I've seen him lie to people's faces when I was working in the United States Senate. He is a liar. And he, basically would impose one rule, as you said, for Republicans and one rule for Democrats, one rule for Republicans during elections, one rule for Democrats. He, you know, has talked about his proudest moment in his entire life was blocking that seat from President Obama filling it. President Obama was a twice duly elected, popularly elected, and winning the Electoral College, elected president of the United States. It was his prerogative to fill that seat with someone like Merrick Garland, who had an unblemished record of fairness, of modesty on the bench. And instead, Mitch McConnell and Leonard Leo and these other right wingers who are so tied to the right wing dark money infrastructure were determined to take over the Supreme Court, to pack it, and not just to pack it with fair people, pack it with people who they believed would not be fair, who were chosen because they were believed that they believed that they would not be fair, that they would in fact impose their personal views and impose this political agenda of the right wing Republican Party. And that's what we have. We have a court that is unsuited to play an independent role in our democracy because it's basically an arm of the farthest right of the Republican Party.
And what do we do from here? I mean, I saw somebody forwarded me an article from the Daily Beast that is blaming Joe Biden for this. The headline is Joe Biden abandoned Texas women to the Republican agenda. What could Joe Biden have done to codify Roe v. Wade? Anything?
Well, I mean, this idea that the president abandoned Texas women is ridiculous. The fact is that the Republican governor, Greg Abbott, did everything he possibly could to try to prevent Texans, women and men, from voting in that election by having one drop-off location in counties that had millions of people in the middle of the worst pandemic in 100 years in American history. So it was Republicans and the Republican leadership of that state that has sought to make it harder for the people of Texas to vote and to have their voices heard and to have their voices carry in the state of Texas, in federal elections and in state elections. They've done everything they can to gerrymander that state in order to basically preserve their minority rule and to try to prevent a Democrat from winning a statewide, basically a statewide seat or even, or many other seats that where they have any margin to kind of crush through these redistricting measures that Texas has really been at the forefront of doing with this this gerrymandering. And so the idea of blaming Biden is actually ridiculous.
That's
of course, it's also the case that there should be a federal statutory right to codify Roe. I would certainly support those measures. And at the same time, we're dealing with a Democratic Party that has power in the sense of having the gavels in the Senate in terms of being able to gavel hearings, have hearings, schedule hearings, but it doesn't have the power necessarily to pass votes because it has a few Democrats like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who are willing to curry favor with the Chamber of Commerce or whatever right-wing group they think is kissing their ring to do their bidding instead of actually defending the principles of the Democratic Party. So I'm personally, not organizationally, but personally disgusted by what I've seen from some of these weak-kneed Democrats who have failed to stand on just basic principles, a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to her reproductive destiny, to her own personal choice about her health. Those are fundamental aspects, in my view, of being a Democrat in our system. And Republicans, you know, have taken this pro-life position that isn't even articulated in the Bible. There's like 600 different edicts under the law of Moses. None of them, not one of them, make any statement about abortion. And the fact is that you have one party that has veered to sort of a far theocratic agenda, a very regressive agenda, and, you know, also has obviously embraced in many ways white supremacist ideology and has also been demonstrably devoted to making it harder for Americans to exercise their freedom to vote. And you have another party that has a bigger tent and that has some individuals like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who are, not reliable in terms of having enough votes to pass good laws.
Anything.
Laws that would make a difference in people's lives.
Right. And so Nancy Pelosi has said the first bill she's going to introduce when Congress comes back on September 20th. First of all, it will be, a bill making Roe v. Wade the law of the land. First of all, why wait till September 20th? Are we not in enough of a crisis right now to bring everybody back and get on this? And second of all, great. So it'll pass the House by 3 votes, maybe. But then it'll die in the Senate because of the filibuster. And you got Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin standing in the way. What are we supposed to do now?
Well, I just think we have to light up the phones. You know, we have to make as many calls. I know people are tired of making calls, but, you know, this is a circumstance in which our rights are being destroyed by this Supreme Court and our rights to, and other rights, basically our right to have a progressive agenda in Washington that will help mitigate climate change, that will advance women's reproductive rights, women's equality, economic equality, women's opportunities for having paid sick leave, all sorts of really important measures that would make a positive difference in people's lives is being thwarted because of the filibuster, which has its roots in, you know, really racist 19th century America.
Yeah.
It's only rarely been used for good. I helped, in fact, for a period, use it for good to try to prevent Brett Kavanaugh, for example, and others from being confirmed to the lower courts. But the fact is that for most of its history, it's been used to deny people's rights and predominantly to deny Black people in America their rights. And so it's well past time for the filibuster to be set aside. It thwarts majority will. It thwarts a majority working in our democracy, and it empowers a minority to basically act in a tyrannical way to undermine what most people want in America, which is, you know, people want to have reproductive freedom. People want to have jobs that pay well and have great benefits. People want to have a safety net that works for them in case they get sick or when they get old.
Yeah.
But these Republicans have conspired over and over and over again to destroy these fundamentals of modern American society, and to do so while also trying to rip away one of the most fundamental rights in a democracy, which is the right to vote. They claim that they're trying to make it harder to cheat. The fact
right.
is that there is no demonstrable evidence of any systemic voting fraud in this country, and no statistically significant voting fraud in any county, any city, any district in the entire United States of America. And so, you know, it's a complete sham what these right wingers are trying to do, both in terms of imposing their personal private religious views on other people who have a right to their own freedom of conscience, as well as their efforts to distort and disrupt the very democratic process that has you know, been moving toward making America a country that fulfills the promises of its democracy rather than a country that represses democracy in our own land. It's outrageous that here we are, Nicole, in 2021, faced with this cast of characters and crooks led by Trump and others that are working every day to make it harder for ordinary Americans, the majority of Americans, to enjoy their lives peacefully, happily, safely in the midst of a pandemic, to have common sense policies about science, climate, the economy, and more. And I think people are going to be really fed up with this court, this decision, and so much more of what this right-wing agenda is doing to this country.
Do we have the right people in place to fix this?
We have some of the right people in place, and, you know, it's going to take substantial efforts in 2022, 2024, and beyond to get more progressives in power in every, you know, district, school districts, counties, and more, cities, states, and federally, because America is a progressive country that's being almost held hostage by these very narrow-minded, regressive people who are very vocal, but actually represent a declining view, a declining, diminishing view in America. One that, you know, is based in part, in my view, on white supremacist, anti-women's equality, regressive views that are just not compatible with 21st century America and our planet.
Right.
Actually doing something to protect us from the climate change that is, you know, manifestly happening in, you know, we see it in Florida, we see it up north, we see it in
God.
The east, and these sycophants like Mitch McConnell and others who are willing to do the bidding of the oil industry over the interests of human beings has got to end. We have got to assert ourselves as American people and as the sovereign people of this nation and demand that our elected officials represent us and not these minority views and not these corporations.
Please. And you know what? I need to run in a minute because Howie Klein is standing by because he's our regular Thursday guest. But Lisa Graves, you know, the one other thing that's jumping out at me is the hypocrisy. And we know the word hypocrite is synonymous with Republican these days, but they've taken it to a whole new level here. You know, they're screaming, oh, what you're doing, you're leaving behind the women of Afghanistan. Really? So they're the American Taliban trying to tell the women of the United States what we can and can't do with our own bodies?
I mean, I'm so glad I have the chance to talk with you, Nicole, in my personal capacity and share my personal views, because I am astonished that this is happening in America in 2021. I along with many Americans, have watched in horror The Handmaid's Tale and you know, that the mini series, in essence, or the TV series about that, and to see. You know, that's obviously a dystopian vision of the future.
We're
but to
living
see
it.
Us veering closer and closer to that with these sorts of progressive rules, the idea that people in Texas or outside of Texas are going to be deputized to turn in women and girls who seek to exercise their fundamental right to personal autonomy, to make a decision about their own body and their own future. It is grotesque to have any state think that it should pass laws like that, that would basically hound women and punish them and reward people who are stalking them and trying to prevent them from exercising their fundamental right to determine their own future.
You know, not
it
only
is
that,
gross and
so
appalling.
Somebody actually, I believe. So let's just leave it in Texas because I'm not sure out of state. So somebody in Houston can know of somebody in Austin and say, I know that person is trying to get an abortion, and I believe this person and that person are helping them, and I believe that nurse counseled this woman on how she can go about getting abortion. They can sue those four people. Those four people would then have to travel from Austin to Houston to where the complainant files this lawsuit to defend themselves. If the defendants somehow win, they're not reimbursed for their costs. So this is going to put undue pressure on anybody. And just Joe Schmo off the street can say, I know that woman wants an abortion, and file a lawsuit. This is what the Supreme Court okayed?
It's the definition of harassment. And also, in some ways, it's worse than that. Suppose it's an abusive boyfriend who doesn't want his girlfriend to have an abortion, or an abusive husband.
Right.
That person can get rewarded with $10,000 under this law if they report the woman who they impregnated, whether it was through rape or whether it was through coercion or whether it was, you know, through a 5-minute sexual encounter that the woman regrets, to try to give her a life sentence of having to go forward with this pregnancy, and have this person rewarded with $10,000. For reporting her, for wanting to exercise her reproductive rights.
Yeah.
It is totally offensive. And I am beyond appalled by the law and by the Supreme Court in allowing it to stand. As Justice Sotomayor said, it's flagrantly unconstitutional. This court should have stopped it and put a stay on it until there was argument before the Supreme Court.
Yep.
But instead, they've allowed this law to stand and go into effect. And it is absolutely detrimental to the fundamental human rights of women in this country, in Texas, and now, as you pointed out, in other states.
That's right.
Where they're going to seek to impose similar regressive, outlandish, theocratic laws on people who do not share their religious beliefs and have no obligation to share their religious beliefs.
Wow. Lisa Graves, I can't thank you enough for weighing in. You're confirming everything I thought, so we are on the same page. This is horrific. On a day with more horrific news, it's just, I don't know how bad it can get. I know you're on vacation. I can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes out to talk to us and lend your expertise and let us know that we're not crazy. What's being done to us is crazy, and we can't let it stand. We need to rise up. We need to take action.
That's right. This will not stand. I think the American people are going to have a reaction to this. There will be consequences for the politicians who embrace effort to impose their personal private views this way and create bounties on women who dare to try to exercise their fundamental human rights.
It's just nuts. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope I don't have to interrupt your vacation again.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Thanks. All right, we're late getting Howie, so let's do this. and get him on the line.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, boy. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hello, Nicole Sandler.
Sorry I'm a little late. I called on Lisa Graves to weigh in on the Supreme Court nonsense. Are you familiar with Lisa? Do you know her?
The name is very familiar. Remind me.
She used to run the Center for Media and Democracy. They're the ones who were behind ALEC Exposed and Koch Exposed, the Koch brothers. She was a deputy assistant attorney general under Clinton. I mean, she's been at the highest levels of the Justice Department. So, you know, she knows the workings of the law. And she's as appalled as I am. I mean, this is the biggest assault on women's rights. They want to set us back over 50 years.
Yeah, that's what they want to do. All right. And they've been quite open about it as well. And can I put in a little commercial for a second?
Yeah.
So one of the candidates that we're supporting at Blue America is Jessica Cisneros, and she's running against the only Democrat in the whole Congress, in the whole House, who supports this crap, Henry Cisneros. Cisneros is a blue dog Democrat in Texas. He's the only one left. The rest of them were all defeated, either in primaries or in general elections. And he is an anti-choice psychotic. And Jessica, of course, is a very progressive and very pro-choice. And she's running against him, and she's doing a very good job at it.
No relation? They just have the same last name?
No, his name is Cuellar.
You said Cisneros. Okay, Henry Cuellar. That's
and
what I thought.
Jessica Cisneros.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the good person is Jessica Cisneros.
The bad guy is Henry Cuellar.
Formerly someone who was always known as George W. Bush's favorite Democrat.
When
Cuellar was in the state legislature and George W. Bush was the governor of Texas. So that's how long ago Cisneros has been basically a Republican with a D next to his name.
Wow. No, we need to get rid of him and make a lot of changes, not only in Texas, but everywhere. So Nancy Pelosi says when the House reconvenes on September 20th, the first bill they're going to take up is a bill to codify into law Roe v. Wade.
Another commercial.
Right. Okay. Because I'm going to say, why the hell are they waiting until September 20th?
Well, in between your sentence.
Go.
Judy Chu, who wrote that bill that you're talking about now, was also a Blue America candidate when she first ran for Congress. End of commercial.
Okay. Okay. Well, so why is Nancy Pelosi waiting till September 20th? Isn't there enough of an emergency right now between this, because this should send shockwaves through the entire nation, that Congress doesn't need to stay out for another 3 weeks on vacation? They need to come back and fix this. Plus, you know, we've got a climate emergency with a second hurricane in 2 weeks strikes New York City, wreaking such havoc. Have you seen the and it's not only New York, it's Philadelphia, it's New Jersey, it's all over the place. The once in a lifetime storms are happening now weekly in the United States.
Right. So, yes, I agree with you 100%. Congress should not be on vacation right now. What can I say?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to put my faith in the Democrats because obviously between them and the Republicans.
No.
But what I'm saying is they're the only ones that, you know, can fix this. Because the Republicans are just going to continue burning down the House, and this is what we're stuck with?
They have to be forced into fixing anything. They'll do nothing unless they're forced into it. I just saw this. I just tweeted this just as you were calling. It's a quote from Joe Manchin. I'll just read the quote exactly.
I think I know what you're going to say.
If the country is facing what we're facing now, I would ask my colleagues and all of the Senate to hit the pause button on the $3.5 trillion. Let's sit back. Let's see what happens. We have so much on our plate.
Oh, my God. He is a fucking moron. So our infrastructure.
You're not going to get anything out of the Democrats unless you beat them to a bloody pulp. That's it. The Democrats are basically as worthless as the Republicans, but not quite as worthless.
Right. Well, we've been beaten. We're bloodied. Okay, so when does it get better?
When I say we have to beat them, I mean we the people. We, you know, grassroots progressives have to beat them up, kill them. I don't mean actually shoot them. I mean, like, you know, beat them within an inch of their lives rhetorically.
Yeah, I guess you can tell I'm so, it's like one thing after another, after another, after another. And as I just said to Lisa, you know, these are the same people. Republican is synonymous with hypocrisy these days. These are the same people screaming, oh, the women we left behind in Afghanistan. What are they going to do? They're just doing it to us here.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right.
This is American Sharia law.
I posted a snapshot of my ballot for the California a recall.
Uh-huh.
I voted yes on the recall. I am getting so much.
You voted yes on the recall?
People are just so angry.
Well, hell,
I am
too.
That I voted yes.
Really?
But the thing is that I do not vote for neoliberals. I do not vote for corrupt corporate Democrats. Yes, the alternative was worse. So the lesser of two evils is what everyone is thinking. I don't vote for lesser of two evils, and that's simply because the lesser of two evils is also evil.
I understand. But you know what? Voting no on the recall is not casting a vote for Gavin Newsom. It's saying, let's wait until the election in 2022 to vote in a new governor, because what you're doing is essentially voting for Larry Elder, which is really scary, Howie.
I didn't vote for Larry Elder. I voted for the Green Party candidate.
Oh, come on. All right.
He's very good, by the way.
But he's not going to win.
He's not going to win. And in fact, if you want to make this into a prediction of who's going to win, it's very simple. Gavin Newsom is going to win. I mean, every single poll every day that comes out shows him winning and winning by a lot.
Really?
Would I have voted
okay,
for
I
him
don't
if
see
I
that.
Thought there was actually a chance that he could lose? I don't know. I don't know because I literally don't know. But
right.
I like to think that I would have voted to recall him anyway. But I feel confident that the recall is going to lose. So I voted yes to recall him. I voted yes to recall him because he's terrible. And I don't agree with it's not a vote for Gavin Newsom. It is a vote for Gavin Newsom. He doesn't belong in office. He never belonged in office. I voted against him when he ran.
And I
will not vote for terrible candidates. And that's what we're talking about now. We're talking about voting for you want to train the Democrats to be good? Defeat people like Gavin Newsom.
I understand,
people like Joe Manchin. Is the alternative to them worse? Yes, the alternative is worse. But the Democrats have to be taught that if they don't nominate good candidates, the people will not vote for them. It's that simple.
I understand.
You know, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Ed Markey put out a statement that's getting widely circulated about how every Democrat should be in favor of getting rid of the filibuster and expanding the Supreme Court.
Yep.
He did it very well.
Good.
And, you know, I've been talking to candidates all week about it. And some candidates, like, for example, Erica Smith in North Carolina, Alan Grayson in Florida, some of the candidates are coming out very, very strongly in saying exactly the same thing that Ed Markey, the senator from Massachusetts, is saying. But not all of them. Plenty, mostly, in fact, most of the Chuck Schumer candidates, So the ones that are favored to win because Schumer's behind them, they won't say it. I mean, they absolutely refuse to engage. You know, someone like Val Demings will not say that she's for these things. She doesn't say she's against them, but she won't say she's for them. Same thing all up and down the line. All of these conservative and status quo type Democrats are ducking the issue. So they shouldn't be voted for. We haven't. This is the primary season. We should vote for the good candidates.
Well, I agree.
The good candidates are the ones who are backing changing the filibuster or getting rid of the filibuster, reforming the filibuster, eliminating the filibuster, whatever you want to call it, and for expanding the Supreme Court. Those are the good candidates. The ones who won't say it, those are the bad candidates. You want more Kyrsten Sinemas?
Right.
You want more Joe Manchins? Of course not. But that's the choice we have to realize that we're being asked to make.
And Howie, I agree with you on all of that. Here's the thing.
I'm talking to the audience. Like you.
This recall election is a Republican ploy.
I know what it is. I live here.
Right. So, but you're playing into their hands. I'm sorry. If you want to vote out Gavin Newsom, you do it at an official election. You don't give them their ploy, their bullshit ploy, to oust the second Democratic governor, in 2 decades? Because they don't like the guy who's there now? Well, elections have consequences. You know what? Newsom won. You let him. Hold on. Let me finish. Newsom won. You let him serve out his term. Good, bad, or indifferent. Another election is coming up in November of 22. That's when you vote. That's when you vote him out. But to let them have their way,
be voting him out. But he won't. If he wins this recall, which he's going to win this recall, it's going to be very, very, very hard to get rid of him in 2022. He'll win again.
Well, then, you know what? Then California made its bed. I'm sorry, giving in to the Republicans.
I'm not part of that making of that bed. And I don't see this. Yes, of course, all Republicans favor getting rid of Gavin Newsom. Absolutely. But this thing wouldn't have gotten on the ballot if not for plenty of Democrats and plenty of independents who were nauseated by Gavin Newsom.
What has he done that's so bad?
He is a corporate Democrat. Everything he does is bad. And that includes things that includes not just doing things, but not doing things. You know why? He has a supermajority in both houses of the legislature.
Yeah.
What has California done? Everything that they try to do in terms of climate change and in terms of Medicare for all and all of the really progressive issues, California could pass all of them. California has passed none of them.
And why didn't they do it under Jerry Brown?
He's another one that sucked.
Jerry Brown brought California out of financial ruin. No one's going to be perfect, are they? I mean, who would you pick as governor? Who would meet your criteria, Howie?
Well, for one would be Kevin DeLeon, who ran for the U.S. Senate. I think I don't think he's going to run, but I think he would be a great governor.
Okay. But, you know, to paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld, you have to, you know, deal with the candidates you're given, not the candidates you wish you had.
No, what I'm saying is that we should not support neoliberal corporate Democrats. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I agree.
And I won't, and have stopped doing that after 2008 when I voted for Obama. That was the last one I voted for.
Wow. Okay. I'm going on record. I completely disagree with you. And if Larry Elder becomes governor of California,
not going to.
And Dianne Feinstein keels over from a heart attack,
California governor with 20% of the vote,
yes,
and gets half the number of votes that Gavin Newsom gets, which is what would happen.
Yeah.
Even though it's not going to happen, but that say it happens.
Yeah.
The California legislature will impeach him in 2 seconds.
No, they won't.
Sure, they will.
And then what happens?
You think they're going to let him pick
Dianne Feinstein's replacement?
Ex-senator, if what's her name?
Yeah.
If
Dianne Feinstein
if
keels
Feinstein
over.
Feinstein dies?
Yeah.
They're not going to let him do that. There's no way that would happen.
Then why are they allowing this fucking recall in the first place? Why didn't they get rid of that whole procedure?
Who's allowing the recall? The people who
the legislature
in charge of having these silly recalls. Why didn't they get rid of the recall?
Good question.
Why didn't they rewrite the recall so it made some sense instead of being as idiotic as it is?
That's the million-dollar question today.
That's the party that you're supporting.
No,
they can do anything they want. They have supermajorities in both houses. They can do anything they want, and yet this recall is happening. Why? What is wrong with these people? Not only that, but every Democrat who almost got on the ballot, the Democratic establishment said to them, if you run, you're dead to us. You'll never be part of this party again. And there were Democrats, decent Democrats, who wanted to run, and the Democratic establishment knew if a decent Democrat was running, that would be it for Newsom. He would have no chance to win.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I have all the answers, but
painful.
We're just
the
fucked.
Answer is painful.
We are completely
we
fucked.
We have to completely stop supporting conservative, neoliberal, corporate, corrupt Democrats. And it's painful.
It is, but you give me a choice.
I know it is.
Between
the Democrats will never learn a lesson. You know what lesson they're going to take out of this? Oh, we won. People love corrupt, corporate, neoliberal, conservative Democrats. That's the message that will come out of this for the Democratic establishment. We won. Everyone loves the crap we are.
It's not going to be a landslide. It's not going to be overwhelming. Obviously, the fact that.
It is. It's going to be overwhelming.
Okay, well, we'll have to reconvene after the votes are counted in 2 weeks.
It'll be better than 60-40.
Really? I hope you're right. Because that's not what I'm hearing. And the fact that the way this recall election law is set up, Larry Elder could get 10% of the vote and waltz into the governor's office. That scares the shit out of me. I'm sorry, that's what?
Exactly right.
Yeah, and that scares the shit out of me. So obviously what this tells me is
that
the California legislature has its head up its ass as much as the Florida legislature does.
Why didn't they rewrite this?
I don't know.
Why didn't they make it like rational and insane? Because they don't want it to be that way. They want it to be this kind of craziness because they want to scare people.
We are scared.
You know, instead of Larry Elder being the best known person on the ballot, it could have easily been, for example, Antonio Villaraigosa. Antonio Villaraigosa already started hiring people, including a friend of mine, to work on his campaign for governor for this recall. He was in it. He was doing interviews. He would have been the governor, and the Democratic establishment came down so hard on him that he had to pull back.
Who heads the Democratic Party in California?
Right near me. He sold his house because his house was too fancy, and he had to, he felt he had to live in a more modest house.
Who heads the Democratic Party in California? Isn't it Christine Pelosi?
Nah, there's not really a head of the party in any real sense, but there's like a group of status quo establishment people. Pelosi's part of it. Who make all the decisions. They do it together.
Well, then maybe those are the people we need to replace. Just as we need to replace leadership in Congress. That's who we need to replace. We need to replace the old guard with new progressive people who don't play the old school politics game.
And I agree with you, obviously. But the problem is that we're going to replace the old guard and we will get a new guard that's much worse than the old guard. I mean, Pelosi is pretty bad. But it looks like she's going to be replaced by someone who is not as smart as her, but by a long shot, and someone who is more conservative than her.
Hakeem Jeffries, you're talking about?
Who is worse than her in every possible way.
Yeah. Hakeem Jeffries?
Yes, Hakeem Jeffries.
You know what?
What would you like? Obviously, you would like them to replace her with Pramila Jayapal.
Yes, I would. Exactly. That's exactly the name I was going to bring up.
That's not going to happen.
No, I know.
No way. You know, the people who discuss these things and then the media starts, floating these names and enforcing it, none of those people want Pramila.
Right.
We want Pramila, but they don't. And so you'll never read her name when they start talking about possible contenders.
I hear you.
And that probably discourages her.
What about Katie Porter?
You don't. You hear her name for that?
No, but she'd be great.
Yes, Katie Porter would be absolutely excellent.
Yeah,
she's very, very smart. She's someone who would know how to
play the game too.
She would have all of Nancy's best instincts.
Yep,
and she wouldn't be the kind of. She wouldn't be the kind of speaker that Nancy is. Nancy's been in power for too long.
That's right.
And she lost a lot of her edge. Remember, Nancy was one of the original members of the Progressive Caucus.
Oh, I know.
She started out as a progressive. Yep. She started out pretty good, and she went downhill from there.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm afraid to even verbalize what I'm thinking, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm nothing if not honest. I'm afraid that we are now in the minority. I used to think that the progressives were on the rise, that we had all the answers and we had the numbers. I don't think that anymore. I think that we fucked up. I think that we have been beaten down and, we need to rebuild.
I agree with you. You're right, except for one thing.
Yeah.
Policy. On policy, we're still the majority, and there's something wrong that we can't make it work between policy and the rest of it. Everybody seems to agree with progressive policy, and it's being somewhat adopted by the more conservative factions of the party. I mean, who would have ever thought? I mean, you know what we think of Joe Manchin, right?
Yeah.
I have to say, everybody knows Joe Manchin, what Joe Manchin is. Well, guess what? The guy sitting in the White House, when he was in the Senate, he was Joe Manchin.
Of course he was. But say what you will about Joe Biden, and believe me, I've got my issues with him. He got us the fuck out of Afghanistan. I applaud
that's
him
saying,
for
he's
that.
Adopting, that was my point. He's adopting progressive stance.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
When he
was in the Senate, he's Joe Manchin. Now he's in the White House, and he's a lot better than he ever was when he was in the Senate.
Yep. Well, we need more of that. This is just a bad day all around. I hate that you voted yes on the recall. I really do. But, you know.
Well, everyone I know does. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was what I was saying. I posted a picture on my blog, and everyone is freaking out.
Yeah, I understand why. I so hope you're right. If you're wrong, Howie, I'm blaming you.
Well, if I'll tell you what, if the recall passes by one vote, it's my fault.
It's a deal. All right.
I'm not going to apologize for it.
I know.
My point is stop voting for people like Gavin Newsom. These people must be defeated. Is it painful? Yes, it's painful. Absolutely. But it we're never going to get anywhere with this party if we still keep supporting the garbage that they put up.
I hear you. I hear you. But again, look, I'm in Florida. If for governor,
okay, let's talk about Florida.
Okay,
go ahead.
For governor, we have a choice. There are two candidates running: Charlie Crist or Nikki Fried. You know,
yes,
Charlie flip
Crist,
a coin.
You're not going to get worse.
No. But,
and Nikki Fried probably is better. I mean, is there another issue?
But I don't
that she
think
talks
she can win.
Marijuana?
She doesn't talk about marijuana. She doesn't talk about marijuana, just so you know. But she filed her financial disclosure forms yesterday, 2 months late, and it turns out she's got like $1 million stake in a pot company. She's not going to win. Charlie Crist has a better chance of winning. My goal is to get Ron death sentence. But I don't care. I'd rather have Charlie Crist than more on death sentence.
It's not an exaggeration. That's what he is.
A lifelong
Republican who's running around with a D next to his name because he got basically kicked out of the party.
Right. I understand. And I'd still rather have him than Ron death sentence, who's killing us all. I can't go out of my house because Florida is filled with COVID because he's a fucking moron. I'd take Charlie Crist over more on death sentence in a heartbeat.
But that's in the general, and if that's what you want to do, that's what you do.
Right.
But we're talking about a
primary. And I'm always imploring people on the primary. This is where we have our power. This is where you go out and you find the best candidate possible. Problem is, I don't think Nikki Fried is the best candidate possible. She's the fucking agriculture commissioner, and I know in Florida that's a bigger job than in most other states, but still, she's not great. Let's put it that way.
I know.
We're so screwed. We are so screwed. Ay, ay, ay. Guess who I had on the show yesterday?
You got to give me some kind of a hint.
Joe Walsh, and not the guitar player.
Oh, great. How was he?
He was ill-informed. He was, you know, sufficiently critical of Trump and today's Republican Party, but he has no clue about modern monetary theory, about healthcare, about a living wage. He just is uninformed on the issues. He falls back on, I'm a libertarian. He still just is uninformed. I told him to go read the deficit myth. And he's like, okay, you can send it to me. Fuck you. Go buy it. He can afford it.
Did you get along with him?
Yeah. Oh, I was very nice. I was very nice. I surprised even myself. We agreed to disagree over policy issues, but we had an adult civilized conversation. It's the first one I've had with a Republican. Well, he's not a Republican anymore. He's a independent libertarian, but still with a conservative in a long, long time.
And does he consider himself a conservative still?
Yes.
He does, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yep. Does not think everybody deserves a living wage. Doesn't think he agrees with the so-called bipartisan infrastructure deal. But he's like Joe Manchin. He doesn't want the other one. He doesn't believe in Medicare for all. He believes in the for-profit, extortionist healthcare system we have now. He's just wrong on everything because he's uninformed. He still likes to talk a lot, and it seems like he doesn't read very much. So that was my experience with him. But it was a very nice, cordial conversation.
Good. Yeah. But I mean, I hope that people come away from that realizing the truth about these Republicans who hate Trump.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason that they hate Trump, that doesn't mean they're any good.
Right.
They're still conservative Republicans.
Yep. Why did I just hear something going on? All right, so is that a ringtone or something?
What?
Was that little piano thing there, the beginning of Something Going On by Blood, Sweat, and Tears?
Oh, I wish. No, it was Roland calling me on my cell phone.
But what is your ringtone? Because the best, one of the 10 best albums of all time is the first Blood, Sweat, and Tears album with Al Kooper, Child is Father to the Man. And there's a song on there called Something Going On. And that piano riff is the beginning of that song. Go listen to it.
Oh, amazing. That is incredible. And I knew those guys when they were just getting started. I actually worked in their home base, which was
really
the Cafe Ogogo.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, that album is one of my top 10 Desert Island all-time great. And once Al Kooper left, yeah, you know, they were okay. But that album, Child is Father to the Man, put it on, start to finish, just brilliant.
I'm getting it ready right now. I'm going to listen to it.
Okay, you do that. Howie Klein, still love you. Think you're wrong, but still love you.
Stop voting for these horrible Democrats.
All right, I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye, Nicole.
All right. Can't agree on everything. Yes, we can't. I'll call him out when I think he's wrong, and I think he's dead wrong on that one. All right. Tomorrow is Friday. John Nichols will be here to help us finish out the week. We were going to talk about Bernie Sanders, but obviously we have a lot of other things to talk about, too. So I will see you then. I'm not filling in for Brad Friedman tonight, so I can take a deep breath and relax. And tonight's our other anniversary. So we're going to go celebrate one way or another. I'll leave you with the news. I'll see you tomorrow. And thanks. Thanks, everyone. Oh, God. I was going to say, cheer up. We'll get through this. I hate to say it. I don't know that we will. That's where I am right now. Sorry. I wish I could be more optimistic, but I can't. I think we are fucked and not in a good way. All right. With that, see you tomorrow, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's hard to figure out where to begin today because we've got a few lead stories, all of them devastating. but will start in New York City and the Eastern Seaboard. They knew they'd be hit with the remnants of Hurricane Ida, but no one was prepared for the record-breaking rains that crippled the region, prompting the National Weather Service to issue a flash flood emergency in New York City for the very first time. Just last week, the aftermath of Tropical Storm Henri set a new rainfall record in Central Park of 1.94 inches in an hour. Well, on Wednesday night, Ida shattered that record, dumping 3.1 inches in an hour. Water flooded the subways and shut down the entire system. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio issued a travel ban overnight and ordered all non-emergency vehicles off the roads. New Jersey Transit suspended all rail service. At last count, 8 deaths have already been reported from the storm as the skies clear and the damage begins being assessed. More on the climate disaster coming up. Yesterday, we told you that the Supreme Court didn't act to prevent the nation's most restrictive and vindictive anti-abortion law from taking effect in Texas. Late Wednesday night, the court did weigh in, ruling 5-4 against blocking the law that bans abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy or at the time a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is usually before a woman even knows she's pregnant. The law not only criminalizes abortion, but allows anyone, anywhere, even people with no connection whatsoever to the person seeking the abortion, to sue anyone who aids or abets the effort. Not only doctors, but counselors, even drivers who might take a woman to seek an abortion. Not only that, the plaintiff can sue from anywhere in the country, and the person being sued must travel at their own expense to the place where the person has filed the lawsuit. And even if the person being sued wins, they can't recover the costs of defending themselves against the nonsense lawsuit. And if the plaintiff wins the lawsuit, he gets a $10,000 bounty. And the Supreme Court let this through? The decision they issued was just 2 pages. It was unsigned and said that the challenge by abortion providers, quote, raised serious questions regarding the constitutionality of the Texas law at issue, but they still let it stand. The 3 so-called liberal justices dissented, with Justice Sonia Sotomayor writing that the law was a flagrantly unconstitutional attempt to circumvent the court's precedents, which clearly established the right to abortion up to fetal viability at 22 to 24 weeks. Chief Justice John Roberts voted with the 3, but didn't join in their dissent. This is what we've been fearing. But let's get back to the climate disaster, shall we? Out west, the massive Caldor fire, which has already forced thousands to evacuate Lake Tahoe in California, is still growing incredibly quickly and is now pushing closer to the Nevada state line. The fire now covers about 320 square miles and is only 20% contained. Nevada authorities have now opened evacuation centers to accommodate the 22,000 South Lake Tahoe residents and others forced to flee their homes. And there's still the coronavirus pandemic showing no signs of easing as too many people refuse to get vaccinated, thereby helping the virus mutate into even more dangerous and communicable variants. More than 500,000 children tested positive for the virus within the last 3 weeks. Since they went back to school in most cases, sparking more concerns about in-person learning. With vaccination rates low among eligible adolescents, health experts are urging mask mandates as the most effective tool to control infections. CNN medical analyst Dr. Jonathan Reiner said, "The virus is raging in all these children who are unvaccinated. They have no other protection. They're literally sitting ducks." Clinical trials are in progress for children under 12, but even if they're approved, that won't help the mental deficiency in some of the parents who refuse the vaccinations. Now, some might think this constitutes getting away with murder. Falling through the news cracks yesterday because there were a few things going on, Purdue Pharma, the company that makes the highly addictive opioid OxyContin, and spurred a crisis resulting in the deaths of more than 500,000 people in the United States alone, was dissolved on Wednesday. that's part of the settlement finalized that requires the Sackler family, the owners of Purdue, to pay $4.6 billion for their role in the opioid epidemic. But here's the sticking point. It also absolves the family and Purdue Pharma of any further liability related to opioid addictions and deaths. This agreement effectively ends thousands of lawsuits brought by state and local governments, tribes, hospitals, and individuals over the role of Purdue Pharma in the crisis. The judge, Robert Drain of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in New York, called the result bitter, saying he had expected a higher settlement. You think? At least there was one story that I feel good about reporting today. Three Aurora, Colorado police officers and two paramedics were indicted Wednesday on manslaughter and other charges over the death of Elijah McClain, a 23-year-old black man who was put in a chokehold and then injected with a powerful sedative called ketamine when he was stopped walking home from a convenience store 2 years ago. Police body cam video showed McClain, who was described by his family and friends as a kind, gentle introvert, pleading with the officers not to hurt him, saying, quote, "I'm just different." Stories about the gentle nature of McClain, who was a massage therapist who volunteered to play violin to comfort cats at an animal shelter, quickly spread on social media, fueling outrage over the case and making it a focus of protests against racial injustice and police brutality. Originally, no charges were filed in McClain's death. So speak out. We can change things, but we have to make our voices heard. And that's just some of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.